From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, the curse of El Diablo. That means the devil. Oh, boy. By the way, happy birthday to Steve from Phoenix and also Big Joe in Huntington Beach, California. Enjoy the shows, gentlemen, and happy birthday. Here's what's happening. Three U.S. strikes hit radar sites in Yemen early Thursday out there, hours after missiles targeted the USS Mason warship out there in the Red Sea. The strikes were carried out in self-defense. They come after two missiles targeted the U.S. warship off the coast of Yemen on Sunday, but missed it and hit the water instead. It's about time we retaliate like that. Samsung has issued a global recall for its Note 7 again. But this time, rather than swapping out affected devices, refurbishing them, and trying to salvage the phone, it looks like Samsung is going to completely kill off the entire devices. The company has confirmed that every single device it receives back, and they're hoping they'll get them all back, will be disposed of rather than repaired or refurbished. You know, they've been having problems with batteries blowing up and catching on fire. U.S. job openings fell to an eight-month low in August, and hiring has little changed, suggesting that some easing in the labor market conditions are part of an economic recovery. Wells Fargo has announced its chairman and CEO, John Stump, is going to leave the company, retiring effective immediately. The news comes after the company found itself in hot water in the wake of a customer account scandal that came to light just last month. Donald Trump's deeply unsettling and disturbing views make him a danger internationally, according to the UN's human rights chief. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights has cited Mr. Trump's comments on the use of torture and his attitude to vulnerable communities. The Republican presidential candidate's campaign has been marked by a number of controversial comments, of course, and then recent crude remarks, which he admits he did, about women have caused the biggest political fallout so far. And today, two other women are accusing him of stuff that go back years. John Hogue has been following the presidencies for a number of years. He's been right, oh my gosh, a number of times. He, of course, is an expert on predictions, and I thought we'd just bring him in for a little tune-up here right before the November election, which is less than a month away now. John, you initially predicted Hillary Clinton. I just want to get an update from you on where you stand.
Well, I still stand that Hillary Clinton will be the president, and that would make me 13-0 in predicting the presidencies if that does indeed happen. I think it will. You know, it's interesting. I've been going back through my work over the years just to see when I started making predictions about Hillary Clinton being the first female president of the United States. And it goes all the way back to the 12th of November with Ian Punnett and Coast to Coast AM.
That's right.
When I began talking about her being the first female president. That's 16 years ago.
We were going to have you on, and still will, John, on election night, November 8th, and we will see if these predictions come true. But, it's going to be close, though, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's funny. As much as certain political machinery has been waiting like vultures to pounce, I mean, a lot of this material about Trump and the things he said on radio and other places I've known about. I'm surprised they haven't broadcast his Friar's Roast that he did many years ago, which was quite outrageous. And I'm thinking, okay, now that we're getting close to the election, it's such a surprise that the Billy Bush conversation, all these things finally come out. I mean, it has the potential danger, though, of backfiring. And when I think about what I might be wrong about in this is whether Hillary Clinton's going to win. The question is it going to be a landslide? But I still hold to a little harder prediction to make, actually, is that this is still going to be very close. It's still going to be within 2% of the popular vote. Because despite all the cacophony and all the distractions of what Trump said or who groped whom, this his astrology gets stronger and stronger towards the election day. In fact, he still has the best astrological aspects of anybody on the 8th of November running.
So you would not be surprised, even though you're predicting Hillary Clinton, John, you would not be surprised if Trump wins.
I don't think he'll win, though, you know, I said before that, you know, there's my own predictions that I make, and then I step back as a prophecy scholar and
right.
say, okay, how could I, it's like a scientist who wants to disprove their own theory. What would be a weakness in my prediction? And, I've said in the last 6-7 months that there's only one person that could perhaps break my winning streak of 48 years, and that would be Donald Trump. Though I really don't think that's going to happen. I think my sense is the powers that be have decided, you know how I've said on your show for years, that the choice is not ours, the choice is theirs,
yeah.
the corporations. And they always had Hillary Clinton as their number one choice for the last 8 years. So now she will now become the next president. But in either case, in either future scenario, I've never felt or seen either candidate finishing their first term.
Interesting take. All right, John, we're going to talk to you in a few weeks as we get really close to November 8th. Now, in a political story that nobody except our own George Knapp was expecting, former Blink 182 frontman Tom DeLonge's name showed up in WikiLeaks' latest dump of Hillary Clinton's campaign manager John Podesta's emails. Important policy matters that DeLonge wanted to discuss? Extraterrestrials, aliens, with the released emails hinting at a potential UFO-related project between the two. George Knapp is with us. George had Tom DeLonge on just a few months ago. What a story, George.
Oh, it's huge. It's gone all over the world. I mean, you know, the Wall Street Journal had it, and the Hill, which is a publication for Congress, British newspapers, Rolling Stone, UFO Press, it's all over the place. You know, I think that whoever hacked those emails wanted to embarrass John Podesta by including the stories about UFOs and his interests, but which is weird because he's been pretty open about it, and as has Hillary Clinton, about their ongoing interest, discussing the idea of disclosure, trying to dig up information. So I don't think it really worked as planned. The interesting thing to me, George, is that you know, it seems to confirm a lot of what Tom DeLonge said on our program here back earlier this year. He talked about this project, and C2C listeners will remember what that interview, because it caused quite a hubbub. But he talked about this project, Secret Machines, a multimedia effort to create books and films and documentaries based on what he claimed was information from a whole bunch of insiders, these inside government folks, military, intelligence people who were giving him the goods. And I remember getting quite a reaction from our listeners, people who were saying, oh, who's going to tell a rock star a bunch of classified information, secret stuff about UFOs and aliens? And it turns out from these WikiLeaks documents that Tom DeLonge was right.
Yeah, he sure was. And what's amazing, George, is his ability to get to John Podesta and get these emails into him and get responses back.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a couple of UFO writers. Linda Moulton Howe has written a little bit about it since the WikiLeaks documents came out that sort of traces from Tom DeLonge not only the links to John Podesta, but other names, the names of other people who have been helping him along. I think that's the unfortunate part of this leak, is that we don't know what the effect is going to be and how those folks are going to react. Tom is sort of hunkered down, I think, is not quite sure what this is going to do to his effort to sort of pierce the veil of secrecy. Don't know how his advisors are going to react, but I can't believe that they want this attention. You know, it's both encouraging because it confirms that there are people inside that have information and that they're considering releasing it, even if it's through Tom DeLonge. It's encouraging that what he was telling us, the story, is not a bunch of baloney, but we have to wonder where it goes from here, because
exactly.
There are folks, as you well know, George, who aren't going to like this information coming out.
Well, we've got someone like you, George, chasing this story, and I know you will not let it go.
I'll stay on top of it.
You got it. Thanks. George Knapp, and George will be on this weekend, as a matter of fact, on Coast to Coast. Thanks, George. Sightings across the United States of creepy clowns with red lips and fixed smiles have become anything but a laughing matter these days and have cast a menacing tone as Halloween approaches. Since late August, the trend of trying to scare unsuspecting people has grown, with scary-looking clowns lurking in woods, appearing on dark roads or driving in cars, some brandishing knives. The spine-chilling sightings have been reported in states ranging from California, Minnesota, South Carolina, New Jersey, New York. They're all over the place. Just be careful this Halloween, folks. More than 1,300 elderly people go missing in China every day, of 500,000 people a year in a new report. Missing. They're gone. Where do they go? Nobody knows. A 500,000 elderly people in China, poof, they disappear. Well, welcome to the solar system, 2014 UZ224. That's the name of the newest dwarf planet to be discovered in our solar system, a celestial body that's just 330 miles wide and over 8 billion miles away from our sun, hardly a planet X. Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky with us. Stephen, what else is going on these days?
Oh, George, so many wonderful things and great discoveries, as you just reported. But with the 59th anniversary of the space program back on the October 4th date, news now comes to us of a great project known as Asgardia. And that's a collection of business and space scientists that, if they have their way, George, will actually create a whole new nation state in space. Imagine that, with its own flag and symbols as an independent state. And the good news about this is, if we can all get along in this big world today, as we find war and all kinds of things going on naturally, maybe the bright side of this is they're hoping to put satellites in orbit and also find ways to deflect near-Earth asteroids. So just from the fact file, only 14 of the 196 nations on Earth have ever launched a spacecraft into each near-Earth orbit. But the threat of near-Earth asteroids continues, George. So much on the minds of people around the world, we hear of discoveries every day. And locally, I wanted to invite our Phoenix listeners to a very special presentation that I'm doing this Thursday, tomorrow, at the big main library in downtown Phoenix called the Burton Barr Library. And George, I know you'll love the subject, and I wish you were there. It's Asteroids, the Real Threat from Space. We'll be there at 7 p.m. But as we always end off on our program here, the live sky right now. Folks, get set for a most magnificent full moon. Now, we always talk about these objects, but the easy ones to see are like the full moon. We have the beautiful full Hunter's Moon coming up on October the 16th. And also, George, something cool. If you look low into the southwest at sunset, a great lineup of planets, Venus. You can see it easy and bright with the naked eye. Follow it to the left, you'll see Saturn. And then spread out further out, about another 15 degrees, is Mars. And on full moon night on the 16th, makes for a magnificent way to welcome into fall. And, George, we have the Orion meteor shower coming up next week. So much more here, as we always remind our friends, and of course, many people around the world on coast, always remember to keep your eyes to the skies.
Lots going on there in space. Wow. Federal investigators believe that Russian hackers were behind cyber attacks on a contractor for Florida's election system that may have exposed the personal data of Florida voters. That's another strange story, but in a moment, Malcolm Nance joins us. The Plot to Hack America. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Malcolm Nance back with us. Malcolm, of course, a globally recognized counterterrorism expert, intelligence community member who's been deployed to intelligence operations in the Balkans, the Middle East, the sub-Saharan Africa area as well. He is a combat veteran. Couple books out, including The Plot to Hack America, How Putin Cyber Spies and WikiLeaks Tried to Elect an American President. We'll talk about that too. Malcolm, strange times ahead for us, huh? Welcome back.
Well, good evening. Yes, it is strange times considering within the last hour, we've had U.S. forces in combat in Yemen.
Yeah, it's about time that they fought back, I guess. But is Yemen a stronghold for terrorists?
Well, in fact, it is. The last time we were here on Coast to Coast, we had the discussion of my last book, Defeating ISIS.
Yes.
And Yemen has been a stronghold for al-Qaeda, of al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula, since the Saudis defeated them in a civil war in 2005. They were holed up in the northwest corner of Yemen. And then since then, since the civil war started in Yemen and the Saudi intervention, ISIS has sprung up there, and they've been fighting ever since.
I'm seeing a pattern also, Malcolm, you know, we're involved in Syria. We're still in Afghanistan. We're in Iraq. Now we're bombing in Yemen. Is this escalation of a huge magnitude?
Well, it would appear so. You would think that this looks like, you know, the entire global crisis is spreading. But in fact, if you step back and you take a look at it, ISIS is in its last, is, I won't say its last throes, but ISIS as a caliphate is collapsing. And they made this spread. ISIS is sort of like one of those groups where you step on it and it's a ball of mercury and it breaks up and spreads into 100 little areas. But ISIS as a caliphate, as a physical entity, in the next year won't exist. And we defeated them in Libya just this last week. ISIS has been reduced to a 3-block area. So when you hear politicians say, hey, you know, ISIS is all over Libya and they have their oil, not true. They've been defeated by two entirely separate armies. In Yemen, the Saudis and the Gulf states have intervened in Yemen, and their ground forces are fighting both ISIS and al-Qaeda. And the Houthi rebels, who are the ones who are shooting these Iranian-made missiles at us. And Afghanistan, ISIS in Afghanistan has suffered staggering losses over the last year. Even the Taliban hate them. So what you're seeing is you're seeing a higher reporting of information that you generally wouldn't see reporting of. And so people are just much more sensitive to this enemy who's been around since, you know, 2003.
Would we not have been able to get ISIS a little quicker, Malcolm, if we had just stopped their flow of oil, the way they were making money to keep things going?
No. You know, that's another misperception. The oil that ISIS was making in eastern Syria was not their greatest source of income. As a matter of fact, the DHS and put out a recent study in conjunction with a think tank, where they found that the three largest revenues of income for ISIS were from taxation of locals, from licensing and theft of antiquities, and from illicit trafficking of weapons and foodstuffs and things that were needed inside of Syria. Oil was just one component of that. We destroyed it, and the Russians, led off with that by destroying Turkish trucks. But, and ever since, they've never gone back. And then the United States came in and did away with that. But that is not their greatest source of income. It's no longer any source of income.
We're going to spend a lot of time talking about the possibility of Russia trying to hack our election results and altering the election outcome. I want to get into that. But there's some grave concern these days that the Cold War has been ratcheted up, that Russia and the United States seem to be at odds more now than ever before. And there seems to be tension about Russia, especially, using nukes. Now, is that founded or not?
Well, that information is actually coming from the Russian propaganda arms that are now we now have access to on an individual basis. You might remember in the Cold War, you would only have one source of information, and that was Pravda, right?
The
Kremlin's political mouthpiece. Well, Pravda today is now called Russia Today. And it's a television and media channel with other small channels like Sputnik News and things like that. And there's a lot of, you know, propaganda that's been coming out, certainly in the last few weeks. But the tensions with Russia really stem back to Vladimir Putin's second term, which started in 2012. And he had the caretaker government of Medvedev, who was in place before that, so that he could essentially come back and take over as a long-term autocrat in charge of the country. And he just got more aggressive. He decided that with some of Russia's newfound oil wealth, he wanted status in the world. The United States did not do anything aggressive towards Russia, but for the most part, he has decided that as the autocratic ruler of a country which is economically in decline. They're in a very deep recession right now, especially due to depressed oil prices, that he wanted a nation that would gain stature through more aggressive military adventurism, seizing territory in Crimea, which he viewed as ethnically Russian, creating a rebellion in eastern Ukraine to take part most of southern Ukraine, which is ethnically Russian, and to push back against NATO and the Baltic states, which are areas he thinks should be under the control of Russia, which were formerly under the control of the Soviet Union.
All right, hold on, Malcolm. We're going to talk more about that and get into the possibility of hacking our elections next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with Malcolm Nance's book, his latest one, The Plot to Hack America. We'll get right into that in a second. But back to the thoughts of Russia trying to nuke us or vice versa. Is it also, Malcolm, Putin's plan to try to do that, to force Americans to pick someone in the election that he favors?
Well, I think most of the propaganda that we've seen, certainly in the last couple of months, coming out of the Russian political organs that have been oriented towards these ratcheting up of nuclear tensions, including the fact that they put out one of their largest mobile ICBMs, clearly in the open, deployed in the field for U.S. intelligence to see. I think it's really for public consumption within Russia. There was a report just yesterday in the media in the Reuters, where it was said that Russian government had recalled all the families of Russian diplomats deployed around the world. Now, that can only play to the population inside of Russia to make it appear that there is something that the population should be afraid of. They've been trying to influence the U.S. election in completely different terms, I'm sure that we'll discuss in a minute.
Now, let's talk a little bit about this hacking and what might be going on. What do we know for sure about Russia trying to hack us?
Well, you know, I wrote this book about 9 weeks ago. I started it about 9 weeks ago, and it came about because I was writing a huge book on the hacking organizations of ISIS, and known as the Cyber Caliphate Army, and some of their other subgroups. But while researching that book, I found that there were two hacks attributed to ISIS, which were actually carried out by Russian intelligence, by the FSB, their version, you know, the new name for the KGB, and their version of NSA. And when I started researching these two hacks, it became very clear that they were extremely sophisticated. I mean, you know, the equivalent of a Formula One car, you know, in a high school parking lot. It was just one of those things that just should not be there. But painted in the colors of ISIS, right? And this is known as a false flag intelligence operation. And so when the hacks of the DNC came, I had more than enough ammunition already to start researching that, along with some of the top ex-military hackers in the United States. And it became clear, not just from our assessment, but from the largest cybersecurity companies in the West, including CrowdStrike, Mandiant, and other organizations who were looking at the actual viruses and tools that were used to get into the Democratic National Committee servers. And they had fingerprints of a Russian entity that had been seen numerous times before, that had done hackings in the Ukraine, Estonia, Poland, the German parliament, French television, and even attempts on the BBC. And the White House and Central Command. So all of these had been in the past by other security companies and other foreign governments identified as Russian military intelligence, the GRU, and Russian overseas foreign intelligence, the FSB, the state security apparatus's intelligence and information warfare organization, their version of NSA.
Now, with the potential to hack just about anything, what do they want to do in terms of election results? Can they hack them and change them? What are they trying to do?
You know, it's really unfortunate, but, you know, the curse of being a former intelligence officer is that I have the perspective, I have the ability to look at normal things and see them in a completely different light, or to see patterns in ways that journalists don't, and certainly, you know, certainly not news media correspondents. But, you know, so when I see things like this hacking, the first thing I don't go to is, you know, oh, someone has done this because it's fun or easy, or there has to be an end state. There has to be a goal. And certainly by the time August 1st rolled around, it was pretty clear that they were putting their finger on the scale. and that they wanted a certain electoral outcome. But if that outcome doesn't occur, we've seen, since the time that the book went to press, you know, the book came out last week, in the last 6 weeks alone, we've seen over 25 states have their electoral boards and registration list either probed or hacked.
Wow.
And the first two that occurred were, they had the fingerprints of Russian military intelligence, the GRU. They had hacked the voter registrations of Arizona and Illinois. We saw just today the state of Florida mm-hmm. had an attempted hack on their voter registration rolls. And the rest of them, you know, in the intelligence term, for its cyber warfare term, is they've had their rolls screened, which means that they've gone through and they've made it attempted hackings and tried to find access ways into their voter registration logs. But I don't think that's where, if the election has any trouble, I don't think that's where it's going to come from. It's going to come from at the state level, where the voter tallies by county are counted together. Because getting into an individual voting machine is extremely hard. There are too many paper machines in the United States. It would take, you know, thousands and thousands right. of people trying to operate and hack or introduce viruses individually into these machines.
Well, and I'm told that most of the county ones aren't online. It's just within a system, right?
That's correct. But where the one place that they all come together in a node are the tabulations
of
the individual counties at the state level. And so where you get that number that each state certifies their electorate, that is the place where you have the potential for mischief. So imagine, you know, for 5 minutes, live on television, one column suddenly changing by a million or 10 million votes, and then going back. You know,
that's the kind of mischief. What do you think they want, though, Malcolm? What do they want to change? What do they want to alter? If you hack into a system, you want something. You want money. You want to do something. You want information. What do they want? If they hack into state election results, what are they looking for?
Well, you have to see the strategic plan, and this is what the plot to hack America is about. And I'm certain many of your listeners who are old, cold warriors who spent time in the military understand how the Soviet Union did operations. You know, everything was done to the benefit of the state. There had to be some end goal that would, you know, advance the interest of the Soviet Union. And Russia's current autocrat, Vladimir Putin, he is old school KGB.
All the way.
And he went to the Yuri Andropov School of Intelligence. He was brought up as a human intelligence officer who was tasked to steal computer technology from East Germany. So he quickly caught on in the 1990s after the Soviet Union fell, the value of cyber operations and hacking operations as another, you know, contributor to what they call hybrid warfare. And hybrid warfare is a combination of political operations, propaganda operations, cyber theft, and which leads up to either political warfare, where you affect something in another country, or to prepare the battle space for ground warfare like they did in the Ukraine. Against the United States, their goal is pretty obvious, and it's been relatively explicit. They intend to get their preferred candidate elected president, and their preferred candidate is Donald Trump.
We have not endorsed any of the two major candidates, and we've looked at all four, and I've got invites going out soon to get them on to talk with them a little bit about their views and stuff. And if they wanted Donald Trump, as you know, 40% want in this country, and the other group wants Hillary Clinton, so it's almost split right down the middle. What do they want Donald in for? Do they think he is more sympathetic? And he may not be all that wrong. Maybe it's time for peace with the Russians, but give us your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, again, my assessment comes from, you know, decades in intelligence. And this is, you know, it's my reputation certainly is, as someone who's worked, overseas. I started out on the Russian mission. Russian was one of my first languages. It's you have to understand that the enemy's intentions and their behaviors lead you to conclusions. And then what you have to see is you have to pick up from those intentions and their behaviors, you know, what their end result is. And certainly, if you were to actually read this backwards, and my book is actually not a book about Donald Trump. It's a book about Vladimir Putin, the FSB,
right.
You know, the former KGB, and their how this intelligence operation flowed out of the hacking and how it indicated their preference from their hacking. So, you know, it's like coming into your kitchen and seeing indications that there's a mouse in there, right? You're going to see mouse poop, and you're going to have food that's eaten, and you're going to have a little tail that squirms around. All of those things combined together give you the perception that there's something going on. And so in this case, like you said, you haven't endorsed anybody, and I don't endorse anybody, but I do see where the bears have their preference. And the reason that they have this preference is that Donald Trump has been relatively sympathetic to them, and there's been quite a bit of media about that. You know, this isn't a question of making peace with Russia. This is a question of Russia being able to fulfill a decades-long dream. I mean, you know, since the beginning of the Soviet Union in 1917, they have always wanted to have greater influence in the West. And Donald Trump, since 2012, has adopted virtually all of Vladimir Putin's strategic positions about where the United States should have its national security interests.
Mm-hmm.
The dissolution of NATO. NATO has 28 nations. It's been in place since 1947, and it's managed to, with the exception of the war in Bosnia and the Balkans, has managed to keep a major ground war from occurring, and from holding back Russia's encroachment into taking further countries in Western Europe. Now, since the fall of the Soviet Union, even Russia was cooperating with NATO in the
right.
Partnership for Peace. So, but Vladimir Putin views it completely differently. He views NATO as something that, you know, again, he's an old school KGB guy, and he harbors very deep, you know, resentments that go back to the goals of the Soviet Union. It's just that now he has more money, he has more power, he's essentially an autocrat and dictator, and he would like to see that strategic threat of NATO go away. And so that would require the leader of the United States to essentially put the mechanisms in place to do that. And Donald Trump has advocated that NATO, as far as he's concerned, is, you know, obsolete and old, and, you know, some countries aren't paying up.
In your opinion, is Donald right, or is he very wrong about that?
Oh, he's absolutely wrong. And again, this is what surprises me. Many of his supporters, and, you know, I was conservative my whole military career, who fought against the Soviet, who were involved in the Cold War, you know, they're not. This isn't a question of advocating for peace. This is a question of allowing Russia to become the preeminent security, crafter of security framework in the Eastern Hemisphere by dissolving NATO. And granted, one or two countries may be behind in their payments, but I just want to bring attention to one thing. NATO was put together for the mutual defense of all of its members. And the only time NATO has ever invoked the mutual defense article, Article 5, was when the United States was attacked on 9/11 and NATO came forward, invoked Article 5 without any prompting of the United States, and said the United States has been attacked and we will all collectively defend America. And they went with us to Afghanistan for 10
right.
years.
Not that we needed them.
Oh, we needed them desperately.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, look, NATO forces lost almost, 1,000 people in Afghanistan. We've lost almost 3,000. To carry that mission out, we need our NATO allies. We cannot do it alone. I mean, it would have cost us another $1 trillion to carry out the operations where our NATO allies are there assisting us.
I just look at our policies, Malcolm. You know, 9 years Navy for me, and I just think staying in Afghanistan as long as we have, Iraq as long as we have, they've been disasters.
Well, Iraq, of course, is like it would have been akin to, you know, FDR invading Mexico after Pearl Harbor. Iraq was just a mistake, an unnecessary war, which took our eye off the ball of defeating al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. And I served in both places as an intelligence contractor and, you know, carrying out operations there against both terrorist groups. But, you know, we need, you know, the United States has never fought a war alone. I mean, even World War One, we were part of a coalition.
That's right.
World War Two, we created the concept of global military coalitions on a massive scale.
We came and bailed out the French and the English in World War Two.
Absolutely, and since then, the English and the French have been our closest allies and have bailed us out a few times. You know, and this is the whole concept. You know, I often get these conversations, and I hear people say, oh, well, you know, this is all the fault of globalization. America created globalization.
That's right. No question about it.
Yeah, we shipped everything overseas from Spam to shoes in World War II, and then afterwards we turned that into the global market, which made this country the greatest economic power on Earth. So the same thing with our military coalitions. We created that. And getting rid of that in America alone is insane. And anyone who served in the military knows that, you know, you would have to spend all of your children's treasure in order to maintain that status when you can just do it as a coalition of allies.
What about now Iran, China, North Korea as possible hackers too?
You know, there have been hackings by these countries. You know, most famously North Korea hacking Sony Pictures, right?
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, that shows you where North Korea places its emphasis.
Yeah.
You know,
he wanted movies. What
yeah,
can I say?
Well,
right?
Kim Jong-un, you know, he's a petulant little crybaby, and he takes these personal slights personally to the point where he would use a national intelligence apparatus to get back at a movie theater that made a comedy.
About
China,
him.
On the other hand, is far more focused in how they hack and what they hack. They go after industrial secrets. They go after things which will benefit China's ability to trade and sell the very things that they're stealing from us right back to us, right? Interesting point. You know, there's a lot of contention about America being economically viable, you know, having its own energy independence. Well, about 15 years ago, the United States was the largest manufacturer of solar power panels. We were about to dominate that field.
Not anymore.
And the Chinese sensed that and stole and purchased many of these things, cloned them, and they are now the dominant solar power seller in the world. And China is moving faster in that world by selling these panels back to the United States. So mm-hmm. That's what their hackers do. And they go after things. John McCain and Barack Obama, both of their campaigns were hacked in the 2008 election by Chinese players to get at very specific policy positions to determine what those two thought secretly. But nothing like the hacking that we've seen this year.
All right, stay with us, Malcolm. We're going to take this quick break and then come back and talk more about your work, The Plot to Hack America. And, of course, we'll open up the phone lines as well. It's an amazing story of how Russia wants to influence our elections by hacking into them. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.